Ready for the show?
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engines running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Well, greetings, my friends from all over the world. This is Martin Horst speaking, your host on ET First Contact Radio, transmitting from BBS Radio Station 2 and from findingforcesradio.com, simultaneously with a beautiful broadcast with a distinguished guest. He has been on the show before, and he is really interesting, and his information even more. His name is Gerard Aartsen, and Gerard is really a fellow countryman of me. He's from the Netherlands, but his books are being sold all over the world. And Gerard is really amazing. And actually, last summer we were both giving our lecture in Utrecht at the event Earth and Beyond, where we spread information about extraterrestrials and more. And Gerard Aartsen is an author, speaker and researcher. After having traveled around the world as a backpacker, Dutchman Gerard Aartsen settled in Amsterdam as a translator in 1985. In the late 1990s, he decided it was time to change track and eventually earned his Master of Education degree from the Amsterdam University of Applied Sciences, where he has held a teaching position in the Department of Secondary Education since 2001. He has also been a student of Angelus Wisdom, teaching over 35 years, and his many years of study and research into the wisdom teaching resulted in the online reference Our Elder Brother's Return, a history in books from 2008. He has acquired and studied some of the obscure writings by contactee George Adamski. He wrote George Adamski A Herald of the Space Brothers from 2010, with critics acclaimed as a refreshing scholarly treatment of his subject. His second book, Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers, 2011, shows the message from the pre-disinformation contactees all agree on the spiritual realities and the oneness of life. In Priorities for a Planet in Transition, the Space Brothers Case for Justice and Freedom, 2015, Gerard complies what the Space Brothers have shared since the 1950s in terms of alternative, saner ways of organizing society to tackle the crisis that have brought our civilization to its knees. A long-standing co-worker in the worldwide network of groups affiliated with British esotericist Benjamin Crane, the author-writer regularly contributes to the Share International magazine, about the extraterrestrial presence on Earth. In a frequent guest on international radio and TV shows about UFOs and related subjects, and has lectured in America, Europe and Asia. His books have been translated and published in multiple languages. And now his latest book from Gerard that we will discuss today in length is available since September, early October this year, from online book vendors worldwide. And the title is Priorities for a Planet in Transition, The Space Brothers Case, The Final Collapse of Our Economic Systems, Its Cause and the Solution, according to the Space Brothers. And of course, I have some other known authors in the field that have read the book, and there are some very nice comments about it. One of the few well-read and researched people who can tackle the meshed paradigm of both contact and exopolitics. And that's a comment from David Griffin from Exopolitics UK. And then there's another comment, a truly magnificent work with an abundance of research in which love and wisdom is to be found on every single page. We can summarize the essence of Gerard's arts and work as an embodiment of hope. And that's a comment from Mohammed Mesbahi, sharing the world's resources. And that website is sharing.org. And then there's another comment. It is brimmed with hope of a much brighter future for humankind if we take the necessary steps for this to come to fruition. Much needed information at this pivotal time. And that is Julianne Bradley, the author of Breaking Free, Journey of a Reluctant Healer. And then there's another comment. Your political and social observations are so right on. And it is a wonderful hearing you state them with such peaceful authority. And that is a comment from Joan Bird, the author of Montana UFOs and Extraterrestrials. And last but not least, from Paula Harris. She has been on my radio show as well. And she says, read the books from Gerard Aartsen. He is way ahead of the game. And I agree with Paula, and it will be nice to have her on the show again as well, as among the other people that were mentioned. And finally, without further ado, I want to heartfully welcome you to the program, Gerard.
Thank you very much, Martin, especially for your generous introduction.
Yes,
it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, it's a pleasure. And unfortunately, I had to move to another appointment last summer when we were at the same venue giving our lectures, because I was planning to meet you there. But directly after my lecture, I had to move to pick up somebody in the south of the country. So I wasn't able to meet you there. But it would be lovely to meet you soon, somewhere in Amsterdam or in between, because you and I and many others in the Netherlands are now on the forefront of the knowledge about ETs and the whole paradigm around it, spiritual development. People that are working with crop circles like Robert van den Broeke and Jeroen Guijs and others, and there's also Martijn van Staveren. So actually, the Netherlands is now coming and bringing forth some very interesting people around the field. I'm an interviewer, and I can only share what others are writing or researching. But amongst one of them is you, and I feel very privileged to be acquainted to you and be a friend on Facebook and to share this knowledge with the listeners.
Thank you. Thank you. Likewise, it's always good to be able to share information.
Yes, and then let's start and get to the hot glue, because your book is just out. And I first want to ask you, what are the most important messages in the book, if people will read it? What has made you, after, of course, the Space People Here to Help, that was a big success, and we did an interview about that book. And now priority for a planet in transition. I will read a little bit from the introduction. Is that okay?
Yes, sure.
Yes. So beyond speculation and sensationalism, priorities for a planet in transition. The Space Brothers' case for justice and freedom brings together a significant body of information about the alternative, saner ways of organizing society that contactees have been shown by ET visitors since the 1950s. As such, this book addresses the very crisis besetting humanity today and points to the key to their solution, our own active involvement in demanding and affecting lasting change. Now, let's start with this part, Gerard.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very bold statement, and of course I agree with it, and I believe most of the listeners worldwide agree with it. But can you pinpoint exactly what you mean by the significant body of information from the alternative, saner ways of organizing society? How do you see, and how do the ETs see that change come about?
Well, what I'm referring to there is the fact that throughout the accounts of the early contactees, and by early contactees, I mean the people who were contacted and published, or went public with their stories before the disinformation campaign started in the mid 1950s. In their accounts, what is striking is that they were all given insights and information about the way we have organized society around the need to earn money to be able to afford to live, to pay the rent or the mortgage, to buy food, to be able to transport ourselves, etc., etc., even nowadays to buy education. And this system seems to be rather unique, if we may believe the space visitors, because on the other planets, life is organized around the making sure that people have all the basic needs so that they can focus on being creative, being happy, being harmonious, educating themselves, realizing themselves, the art of self-realization. So healthcare, education, housing, food, etc., is basically free. And people don't work for more than a few hours per week. The space visitors have pointed out in it's not just one source, but it's several sources which I compared. If I name a few of the contactees, George Adamski, of course, the first and foremost in terms of the importance of his work, but also Truman Bethrum, Buck Nelson, Orfeo Angelucci, and I'm forgetting a few now. But I've read their books, and the striking thing is that their information is very similar, corroborates their mutual statements, their respective statements, and they're all saying the same: we cannot sustainably continue our present modes of living based on competition and greed. And in fact, they have gone through great lengths to show contactees alternative and more saner ways of organizing society. Some contactees have just gained these insights through conversations they had with space people that they met when they were invited on board Landed Saucer, for instance, like Dino Craspedon in Brazil and Truman Bethrum. Another one that I forgot to mention just now was Daniel Fry. Some people, like George Adamski, were invited on board craft and shown different planets. And there's one contactee who does not belong to the early contactees, but his information coincides precisely with the information from the early contactees. So we may assume that it is authentic. And this is Stefan Denard. And this should be a name that should be familiar to you and many Dutch listeners, but also international listeners, because this Dutch contactee wrote a book in Dutch in 1969, but it was published, translated and published in English in 1977 as Operation Survival Earth. And later it was republished, an expanded edition, by the late Wendell Stevens, the UFO researcher, former US Air Force pilot, as Contact from Planet Iarga. So Stefan Denarde sailed his yacht on the Eastern Scheldt estuary in the southwest of Holland, and sailed it into a semi-submerged craft. And he saw a body floating when it happened, and he didn't hesitate, jumped overboard with a lifeline, and tried to rescue the drowning person, when he saw someone else walking over the semi-submerged hull of the ship, the craft, towards him. And as a thank you, he was offered information about their planet, which they called Iarga. This was a two-day expose with images and information transferred directly, as he describes it, into his mind. Very, very interesting, very specific as to how the society on Iarga is organized. And again, completely completely or very similar and very much corroborating, excuse me, the information coming from people like Daniel Fry and Truman Bethroom and George Adamski. So, you know, in my previous book, Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers, I'd shown by comparing the information from many different contactees from around the world, that their basic message is a spiritual one, namely that we are one as a humankind, human race, but also one with the universe, and that we need to learn to live as one, especially on this planet. And now in this book, Priorities for a Planet in Transition, I brought together the information that they have given us, showing how we may do that, how we could actually live as one, how we could change our social connections, our social modes of living, to give expression to that oneness in a way that will ensure justice and freedom for everyone around the world.
Gerard, I agree with that oneness. I feel one. I feel connected to all life in the universe, and of course humankind as a whole. I just watched the interesting part of that the event is imminent. And there are different ways of interpreting the event. I know that you are, as I am myself, a believer in the return of the Buddha Maitreya, the world teacher. Can you explain that story to the listeners?
Yes, by all means. See, it's one thing to say that we are a one human race, and that unless we learn to express that oneness and act on that realization, but it's quite another to help people realize that oneness. There's many people around the world who very clearly do not sense or realize that oneness. For instance, in the current circumstances, with refugees streaming into Europe, for instance, but there's also economic people going into, for instance, the United States from Latin America, searching for better economic prospects, and many people from Southeast Asia trying to get into Australia. So whether it's for political, religious, or economic oppression. You know, people are trying to look for better opportunities elsewhere. And that's also because the world, the global systems that we live in are rigged in favor of those who have the power already, in this case, the economic power. You know, and lots of people, as we can see in the news these days, are very reluctant, if not resisting, the giving shelter to the refugees in the case of Europe. And, you know, you hear rather fierce voices of people telling the refugees to stay out and telling politicians that they don't want any part of it, rather than responding to human need. And I believe this is all part of, you know, the polarization that's taking place in the world, to make the choice before us very, very clear, so that there will be no misunderstanding. The old structures that are now, you know, becoming less and less effective and are sort of coming to a standstill, political, economical, financial, etc., are based and built on greed and competition, the need to earn money and more of it, as much as you can. And unless we continue in that way, or if we continue in that way, we will create more and more conflict. Yeah, the conflicts are boiling over in the world at this stage. So either we continue in the old way of greed and competition and increasing conflict and chaos, or we turn around and take the other route of international cooperation and sharing to create justice and freedom. The polarization that I just mentioned, I believe, based on the information coming from Benjamin Graham, the British esotericist that I've been working with for well over 35 years, and who is the editor of Share International magazine, one of the sources in my book. He says that this polarization is actually the effect, the result of the enormously powerful energies of love and other cosmic energies coming into the world at this time, at the beginning, the dawn of the new age of Aquarius, as a result of the world teacher and his group of masters of wisdom returning to the everyday world. In order for a sufficient number of people to realize what is going on, this polarization is now making crystal clear the choice before us. And at the moment, the day that the world teacher, who has been preparing the world and humanity unknowingly and incognito for many years, since he arrived in his center in the modern world in 1977, from behind the scenes, he's now ready to step forward. He's been giving interviews incognito without his name, Maitreya, being given. But for many years he's been preparing the world and humanity, and according to Benjamin Graham, he can now, you know, he's now ready to step forward anytime, because the world is ready, and a sufficient number of people will see, as soon as the economic and financial systems collapse, that we have to make different choices, that we have to choose international cooperation, sharing of the world's resources, technology, knowledge, the raw materials, the food, etc., so that we can provide for the basic needs of every man, woman, and child in the world. And interestingly, and that's what I've shown in my book, that is exactly what the early contactees were telling their contacts, their Earth contacts in the 1950s, and especially Stefan Denarde, who had his experience around 1965. And I also quote extensively from his book. So it's very interesting to see how the information from the early contactees and the information from Benjamin Cram, as the most recent exponent of the Ageless Wisdom teaching, coincide and confirm one another.
Yes, I agree. And you can see it from more than even those directions, that this information is coming to the public right now. I'm very curious about your new book, and I would like to go to the next paragraph where you describe the introduction. And I'm stating here, seeing the amount of information that the Space Brothers have shared with us in this respect, ranging from seemingly off-the-cuff remarks to a two-day expose of their planet's social and economic organization, as well as actual visits, is truly astounding, as it presents us with a comprehensive picture of how life on their planets has been organized for sustainability, freedom and justice for all. And of course, you are, amongst others, referring to the Iargans that Stefan Denarde described in his book. But of course, there are many other civilizations. Can you dwell a little bit on how their societies are built and how their structures, their social structures, are organized?
Yes. Well, as I indicated at the start of our interview, the information that that I've compiled in my book focuses mainly on the societies and I hope you'll allow me to elaborate a little bit for listeners who are not familiar with the notion of life on other planets in our own solar system. But yes, societies on Venus and Mars specifically. The information about Venus is available in the books from by George Adamski and also Howard Menger, especially, and I believe a little bit in Daniel Fry's book. Perhaps I should explain that I, based on the information coming from Benjamin Cram and my own studies and the study I did on of Stefan Denarde's book, The Contact from Planet Iarga, I posit in my book that Iarga is really Mars, or rather one of the zones on Mars. Benjamin Cram has said years ago, even in his first book in 1979, that Mars is at about the same level of evolution, at the same stage in evolution as Earth is, except they've made fewer mistakes than we have, and perhaps less serious mistakes in their evolution. And he also said that there are three zones in Mars, A, B, and C, where A, the A zone, the people in the A zone are perfected men, perfected humans. From our point of view, that would be considered gods. In the B zone, they are advanced, but certainly not perfect. And in the C zone, the people are really not very evolved at all. And Benjamin Cram said at one point, they are beings you wouldn't like to meet on a dark night. The reason why I think that Iarga is really the B zone in Mars is that George Adamski received information about Venus. And we know, again, from the Ageless Wisdom teaching, that Venus is far, far advanced, far more evolved than Earth. And he also had contacts from Mars. And the interesting thing is that in George Adamski's books, the information coming from Venus and his Martian contacts are, is show a really exalted source, very highly evolved. If you, especially if you use your, you know, your intuition when you read it. And when you read Stefan Denard's information, the contact, the information from his contact, it is, you know, it shows insight, very acute insights into the needs of our time, etc. But it's rather more mundane in the way it's, you know, it's more prosaic. Also coming from the notion that there's really no need for I would say even no possibility for civilizations from outside our solar system to come and help us when there are civilizations so far advanced in our own solar system that we can learn from. So my conclusion, therefore, was that the information about IARGA is really about the B zone on Mars. And when you read this, the information from the different sources, Adamski, Denard, Menger, Daniel Fry, the picture that emerges is really amazing. You know, if you put all this information together, even if you don't believe IARGA is Mars, it doesn't. You know, that's not really the point. But the point is that they all agree in terms of their descriptions of their societies. There's hardly any illness. And if there is, they know what causes it, that it's caused by, you know, going against the creator's laws. There is no need for police force or armies. There have been no wars for many millions of years. People, as I said, work just a few hours a week, and everybody is happy contributing to what needs to be done, because and there's very little work because and there's a beautiful description of that in Stefan Denard's book. Production there of the the artifacts of life, the things that we need in our daily existence are produced by robots, automated processes, that of course releases people like ourselves for more creative work and more creative development of ourselves and our society. And it's not like, you know, life on their planets is monotonous or boring or anything, but instead they have all the time in the world to explore themselves, to go inside take steps towards self-realization, and also explore outside. In the first chapter of my new book, I give some descriptions of from both Stefan Denard and George Adamski and some others of how the space people love, you know, visiting other planets, and they think that Earth in particular is a beautiful planet, and they're very interested in what goes on here, not just, you know, out of concern for that we might blow ourselves up, but also for the way we have organized society and the religious rituals, etc. And they come here to visit and photograph and learn about other planets, because not everyone on Mars, for instance, is able to step into a flying saucer or a mothership and go to other planets. But everyone is given the opportunity to travel to other planets, to learn, to discover, etc. Yeah. So societies there are really structured and organized to help everyone evolve and develop themselves to the maximum.
Yes, indeed. And I think that's the purpose of all life forms in the universe, humans, animals, plants, in a lesser state, but to evolve ourselves. And I would rather ask you, Gerard, why is it that we are struggling so much on Earth, and why is it that other planets in the solar system and beyond are further in their development, and why is it that some forces here on Earth are holding us back? Is it true that there is a conspiracy where dark forces are stopping the evolution or holding back the evolution of humankind? And if so, how can we continue to evolve into a galactic society? What must we do to achieve that goal?
Yeah, well, what we need to realize, of course, is that we're talking about the evolution of consciousness. Yeah, the evolution of the form, of the physical form, minerals, plants, animals, etc., are all an expression and also a vehicle for the evolution of consciousness. So as on Earth we have people who are less evolved and more evolved than ourselves, with the Masters of Wisdom being a perfect example, of course, of people who are more evolved than ourselves. And even without the Masters of Wisdom, we can see examples in our society of people who, you know, who live to serve others. And that's, you know, as you were just pointing out, that's really the ultimate goal of life, to be of service to others, to the rest of life, to the rest of creation. Think of people like Nelson Mandela, for instance, yeah, or great scientists, great explorers, etc. People who help society, civilization to evolve and to develop. And likewise, in the solar system, there are planets that are less evolved than Earth and more evolved than Earth. To give some examples that Benjamin Graham has given, Venus and Saturn and Jupiter and Mercury are planets that are more evolved than Earth. Mars is about the same level as Earth. And both Mars and Earth apparently are halfway the evolutionary cycle of planets. As human beings are on the path of return to our source, and that means that we need to learn to give expression to our inner divinity. The Christians would call it soul. And once we're able to do that, after many, many, many incarnations, we reach what, you know, the Buddhists would call enlightenment. In Christian terms, it would be called resurrection. Yeah, we release ourselves from the bonds of physical body, and we can live in our spiritual body. You know, so there's this purpose behind it, behind life. And the same goes on a different level, of course, for planets. And it seems that Mars and Earth, according to the wisdom teachings, are halfway through that cycle. They don't go through hundreds of thousands of incarnations like we as human beings do, but through seven rounds or cycles. And there are planets also that are less evolved. When people or planets are less evolved, you know, they have less knowledge, they have less intuition, they make different choices based on what they know. And when you don't know there's a greater purpose to life, then the choices you make are more, you know, self-centered, which is understandable. So, you know, and another complicating factor is that Earth seems, as it seems, is the only planet in our solar system where life has precipitated to a dense physical level. There's no other planet in our system where life has expressed itself, involved itself in matter to the degree that it has on this planet. And that is something, you know, that we cannot know anything about. That's something to do with the goal, the purpose, or the plan of the logos of this planet, who serves the plan of the solar logos. So, you know, those are things that we can know nothing about. And that, of course, also makes it more difficult for life here and for human beings here to evolve. But we have great examples in history. You know, think of the great world teachers, many of whom we know through mythology, like Hermes and Hercules, and others we know through history, like Shankaracharya and Vyasa and Buddha and Christ, etc. So, you know, there's always guidance and inspiration coming from that society of enlightened men, the masters of wisdom, the great spiritual brotherhood. It's just a matter of us putting it into practice. It's interesting because in my book I also have many quotations from the contactees as they were told about the laws of the Creator, godly laws, you know, comparing how people on the other planets live by the laws of God, or the laws of life, as they're called, and we don't. We, you know, in generally speaking, in terms of more traditional religions, we know that there's a creator, etc., and we have been given these laws. Most importantly, in the latest installment, through Jesus, the Christ, when he worked through Jesus in Palestine, to treat others the way we would like to be treated, the law of harmlessness. And we just need to do it. And unless we do it, we'll be stuck in this mess. So it's really a matter of, and that's why this time is so important. This is really a crucial time in our history. There now, and that's the reason why the world teacher is able to return at this time, together with a group of 14 masters of wisdom, because apparently there is a sufficiently large number of people who are ready to express and who have reached a sufficiently high level of evolution to express that realization that we are one. It's not a majority, but according to the information from Benjamin Graham, it's a sufficient number of people to affect the changes that we need to implement. There's so many global problems at the moment with the environment, with wars, conflicts, and many of them caused really by injustice, economic injustice, political injustice, etc., inequality, and all these global problems need a global solution. I know that many people are afraid of a new world order and some totalitarian elite who is trying to enforce or secure their power and subjugate the rest of humanity. Well, yes, there is a global elite, and we know who they are because they run the corporations, and the corporations increasingly are running the governments. They can buy elections, they influence democratic procedures, they have laws made and accepted that favor the large corporations over citizens and consumers, etc. So, you know, those are real problems, but the real global problems cannot be solved on a local level. We can contribute a whole lot to a better world on a local level, but we also need global solutions for global problems. And when the world teacher steps forward, he will not only give humanity, all of humanity, a profound experience of our oneness, through an outpouring of his the energy of love that he embodies. And people think of love perhaps as some sentimental notion, but love is really the glue of the universe, and it's I would say the most misunderstood concept in esotericism and the whole in the wisdom teachings and in human relations. You know, we really, and I include myself, we really have no proper idea of what love actually is. But we will experience that on that day called the Day of Declaration, when the world teacher will make himself known. And he will show us the heights from which we have fallen, and the future that lies ahead of us if we make the right choice. And he will give us a message telepathically, so everyone will hear it in their own language, in their own mind. We will not speak. We will see his face on perhaps on the internet and television, etc., but his lips will not be moving, but we will hear his voice, his thoughts in our minds, each individually. And that's, according to Benjamin Graham, how we will know that he is the world teacher, you know, expected by Christians as the second coming of the Christ, and by Buddhists as the future Buddha, Maitreya, and by Hindus as the 10th incarnation of Vishnu, etc., etc. So it's really a crucial time. And but it is also crucial to understand that the world teacher and the masters of wisdom and the space brothers will not be saving us. They cannot save us. We can only save ourselves. They are here to inspire and guide us to make the right choices, and to help us see reality through this whole web of illusion that we've spun around life for ourselves. And inspire us to make the right choices to save ourselves, to save the planet. And again, in another chapter in my book, I show again how many different contactees have been told that it is the people who need to save themselves. You know, it's really sad that the stories of the contactees of the 1950s, over the years, especially in the 60s and 70s, were simplified to the point that they were completely distorted, and people didn't take them seriously anymore. So that now there's several books written about those days as if they were bringing a new religion, so that people won't have to think for themselves anymore, etc. And they will come to save us, etc. It's rubbish. It's not what they said. And I did in my previous books, I've used direct quotes with references to page numbers from where I quoted, and it shows that what they have said is you must save yourselves, and people have to unite, they have to act together, and that's what we see. And that's why it's so hopeful, what we see in the world today. It's more and more people coming together when it counts, demonstrating for justice and freedom. And that's really what we need to do. And that's how we will save ourselves and the planet. And if people are afraid that, it might not be enough, well, wait for the day that the world teacher will make himself known and see what happens then. But better yet, help to create the change by stepping in before the world teacher shows himself and demanding justice and freedom.
I believe that is what we are to do as humanity as a whole, indeed, my friend. Gerard, I would like to use a little musical break that we can enjoy and relax and get ourselves a nice cup of tea or water or coffee, whatever you prefer. And then we will be back with more questions and more interesting information that you will release. Is that okay for you?
Yes. Okay. Could you let me know? I thought it was going to be a one-hour program, but how long is the program going to be?
It's a 1.5-hour program.
So okay. All right. Yes.
If we have time until 10:30 Central Europe.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Right, here is Instinctive Traveler, Part A, from Peter Merschner, from the album Instinctive Traveler from 1977. Beautiful music, and Gerard and I will be back. Stay tuned, my friends. Now we are now at the last part of the interview with Gerard Aartsen on ET First Contact Radio. And Gerard, I would like to ask you if you can pinpoint the most important subjects that you have written in your new book titled Priorities for a Planet in Transition, that is just out since October this year. So please tell us the key points in the book that are the most important in the coming
I can do that by giving a brief rundown of the chapters in it, if I may.
Sure.
The first chapter
I just want to say before you start, Gerard, that we have time until around 22:25, and then we have to sign off. Okay.
Oh sure, yes. I'll keep track of that, and I'm sure we'll have time for another question. But the first chapter, I titled "The Extraterrestrial Presence: Seeing the Forest for the Trees," and in it I try to show that. Lots of people have asked me since my previous book, and you see it online also very often, the question, okay, so let's accept that they are real, but why don't they show themselves? Yeah, that's a question that keeps popping up all the time. And in the response, in my first chapter, I list a whole range of sightings by the media professionals themselves, not people reporting it to the media, but the media themselves, or on what you call them, webcams that the media have positioned here or there, or NASA, or the solar observatory, heliospheric observatory, things like that. About 24 of these sightings, arguing that they do show themselves, except they have too much respect for our free will and for our right to deny the obvious to impose their presence on us. So that's chapter one, seeing the forest for the trees. Chapter two is titled Earth's Cosmic Isolation, a self-imposed confinement. And in it, I show, based on quotations from many sources, how the way we have organized society on Earth has placed ourselves in cosmic isolation. It's not that the people from other planets are not willing to engage us or not willing to allow us into, cosmic community, but it's because we don't see or recognize or act from the knowledge that we are all one, that life is one, and therefore we are dangerous. We are dangerous to ourselves, and because we're dangerous to ourselves, we would also be dangerous to our neighbors in space. And so it's really our own doing. And until we come to see that life is all one, and we need to look after each other on Earth and outside our planet, we will be in this cosmic isolation. And then chapter three, Right Human Relations, an Extraterrestrial Show and Tell. And in that chapter, I brought together all these things that we just discussed before the break about what life on the other planets looks like, and what life is really about, serving others, the greater good, making sure, on our planet, on the other planets, it has been taken care of, but on our planet especially, making sure that every man, woman, and child has the basic necessities of life. Enough food, adequate housing, healthcare, education, so that there is prospects for the future, and there's prospects for self improvement, betterment, self realization, etc. And as I said extensively, I quoted from Stefan Denard's book Operation Survival Earth about Iarga, which has a very, very particular, very specific, detailed description of the economy on Iarga. Very interesting. And then chapter 4 is titled A New Civilization, We Must Lead the Way. And I've, as I mentioned also before the break, brought together several quotations from contactees telling us to stand up and unite and demand change and make sure that the change will be lasting. For instance, during the break I looked up some quotations. Daniel Fry was told, "Whether or not your children will have any future to look forward to will depend largely upon the success of your own efforts." And I'm just paging through here to the next quotation. Your peoples, this is what Truman Bethlehem was told, your peoples could amalgamate and act in unison instead of constantly warring upon each other. And then you'd find your earth worth living upon. Yeah, so getting together, uniting, and standing up for justice and freedom. Enrique Barrios, a Chilean contactee who had an experience in 1985, he was told, we fulfilled our obligation by offering our help, by serving. Humanity must now make an effort on its own behalf. George Adamski was told, it would seem that the answer lies largely with the ordinary man in the street, multiplied by his millions the world over. And finally, Daniel Fry again was told, if any great and lasting good is to come from our efforts, the space people's efforts, the actual leaders must be your own people. So, and that's 4 chapters, and every chapter has also a sidebar of 1 or 2 pages where I highlight information that might be unfamiliar or controversial to the readers. And also every chapter has an addendum where I go into some details that are not essential for the argument in the book, but provide very interesting background information. And finally, in the appendix, I explain my research method. And I believe that is the first time in any book on ufology or extraterrestrial contact where the method for qualitative research is explicated. So that's makes it that in itself makes it unique.
It's beautiful. Yeah, you know, those contactees in the 50s and 40s and 60s, in general, ufology in the 50s, I was born in 77, to make it clear, but I read many books like you did, Gerard. But the way ufology was conducted in the 50s and 60s and 70s is way more mysterious and profound, actually, than it's today. Of course, today we have the internet with many news outlets with sometimes confusing information. So, Gerard, what is your advice? Because I think when I will read your book, I have read several of your books that you have published before, like The Space Brothers, Here to Help. It's a good read, and for me, it brings back the feeling of the ufology that I can imagine that was conducted by the early researchers in the 50s and 60s, and of course contactees like George Adamski. Now, what is your advice to the listeners how we can go back into the mystery and, like you said in the first chapter, to see into the forest of confusion in ufology, and how to get a clear picture of what's really going on and what our future is, and how contact will take place. So, in general, some advice for the listeners.
Yes. Yeah, the first chapter was called Seeing the Forest for the Trees. Yeah, in Dutch, de bomen door het bos kunnen zien. And it's all the effect of that disinformation campaign. When the early contactees started to draw large crowds with their message that they were given by the space people contacting them, the message of the brotherhood of mankind and the need to work together in international cooperation rather than go to war or try to deter each other with nuclear weapons and the devastation and the destruction that would follow if we would use those terrible weapons. When the contactees were drawing large crowds with that message, that was in the middle of the Cold War, when the USA and their allies and the Soviet Union and their allies were actually head-to-head with their respective nuclear arsenal. So that was worrying for the military and the governments of the time, because they wanted the public to rally around their particular view of life. You know, the sense of freedom that America represents, and the sense of justice that the Soviet Union represented, and of course neither of which is perfect, because neither of which can exist without the other. You know, freedom cannot exist without justice, and justice cannot exist without freedom. So people who are interested in the essence of the whole field of ufology or exopolitics or whatever you want to call it, and that's why I wrote that that appendix about my research method. If you want to know what it's really about, you need to go back to the sources from before the disinformation campaign. Then you can define, as I've done, the touchstones for validity of contact claims. I know there are many people who claim to have been abducted, but there are many people who claim that the extraterrestrials are here, the aliens they call them, you know, to make them more scary, to take over the world or to do other terrible things. But none of that can be found in the stories of the early contactees, because that is misinformation, that is disinformation that was fed on purpose to the public to confuse and scare us. But if you go back to the original information, you know, there's a wealth of information is available, as I show in my books. And once you've done that, you can also read other people's accounts from later dates, like Stefan de Nardes in 1965, Enrique Barrios in 1985, Stefano Breccia about the mass contacts, the friendship case in Italy, many others, and decide for yourself, hey, this coincides with the original message of the contactees, this coincides with the scary stories, the disinformation, etc. And of course, we also need to remember that there's a lot about life that we on this planet do not understand yet. But we need to realize that if people from other planets have been coming here for millennia, as they have, it's been recorded in the first book the first book that George Adamski became world famous for, which he co-wrote with Desmond Leslie, Flying Saucers Have Landed. The largest part of that book is actually an account written by Desmond Leslie of historical sightings. He goes back all the way to the ancient Hindu scriptures and the Old Testament, etc. And it goes through this down through the centuries, documenting sightings. If they have been here for so long, and they are here to conquer the world, well, you know, then they're not very good at their job. You know, you have to be realistic. You have to be commonsensical about it. They're not here to conquer the world. They're here to offer support, as they have always done, just as the Masters of Wisdom have. Because people who have evolved, who have reached a higher point in evolution, They know what life is about, and life is about the betterment of all. Life is about serving others. Life is about growing.
It truly is, my friend. I want to thank you, Gerard, for being here tonight, today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and you are always such an interesting guest, and we have discussed your book in length, Priorities for a Planet in Transition by author Gerard Aartsen. And of course, your website is gbapublications.net, I believe.
bgapublications.org.
Yes, .org. Wonderful. So Gerard, I hope we can meet each other finally, maybe in the new year. And
yes, that would be great.
Yes, and celebrate your book. I'm happy to see that ufology and good information is being spread from the Netherlands. I think we can be proud to be a Dutchman, Gerard, you and I, because we are both working on the spreading of knowledge about ufology. And it's good to see that worldwide people are doing their best to spread knowledge. So this interview will be available on YouTube. And if people watch this, please share it with your friends. And Gerard, I wish you a wonderful weekend and wonderful holidays.
And thank you very much, Maarten. Happy holidays to you and your listeners. And yes, let's hope we can meet soon. It would be great.
My house door is always open for you. So I wish everybody a wonderful holiday and see you very soon. Love and light.